Are you blessed or are you cursed with a strong imagination and a spiritual thirst? Do you wanna confide about the darkness inside? Come and talk about it on Self-Worst.
Hi folks, we're back. Welcome back to Self-Worst Podcast. We have returned. I missed you last week. Didn't get one out, and it wasn't because I didn't have one recorded. I actually recorded this a couple weeks ago. Oops. I had a lot going on. I was busy. I was it was a lot. And the day I recorded this episode with my guest, Ben Wasserman, who I'll get to. You know, it was a big pop-off point with what with Iran and Israel. The World War III, and it caused a little bit of anxiety. If you know anything about me, you know I get a little weird. I get a little triggered. I'm a triggered lib when it comes to stuff like that. I'll admit it. So I was just feeling kind of woozy all week and just feeling kind of weird and decided to just sort of take it easy. And tried my best to chill and vibe. Went up to the Catskills. My lovely girlfriend got us an Airbnb up there, which I wouldn't have the initiative to do, nor would I have the funds to do. So I'm glad that I can ride along for stuff like this. And we went up there and we watched our dog Dottie, frolic around in nature. Her other friend, a dog friend, came up from the neighborhood and they were both running around up there, just frolicking their little asses off, having a great time. She natured so hard that she put a blister in her little paw. Now we have to have her bandaged up. We have to put her in the little cone, which she doesn't like, but oh, is it cute. Oh my God. Found it hard to vibe up in the Catskills for a while. Just because, I don't know, it's just the world and anxiety and money and all kinds of stuff just sort of swirling around in my head. Found it a little hard to just sort of disconnect from that. Eventually could. One good thing about going up there is around where we were staying is there's no cell service, which is actually great because you can just sort of Y2K the internet, just sort of keep it at home. It's only there. It's waiting for you on the family computer, waiting for you to download some LimeWire, put some viruses on your computer with porn MPEGs and MP3s, and it's maybe a better way of living, honestly, rather than having the shit in your pocket all the time. Don't need that. Don't like it. I know that this podcast is a result of that technology, and that's fine, but, you know, it's a real mixed bag. What are you gonna do? Anyway, I finally was able to just sort of just chill out. Just kind of vibe. Look at the mountains. Look at the trees. Look at the clouds. Look at the... Just listen to the emptiness. The nothingness. The stillness. I swear to God, every time I leave the city, for the first 24 hours I'm out of town, my ears ring. First couple of times I did it, I thought it was maybe because, like, oh, it was, like, the road. My ears are ringing from the road or the plane. No, I think it's just the constant white noise of the city. The BQE, just the constant din of traffic, construction noise, all kinds of bullshit. And then I finally go out where it's actually quiet. And there aren't really leaves on the trees yet, so there's no rustling. All there was the sound of a babbling brook. 100, 200, 300, 400 yards away. Way over there. I'm not good with distances. It was far away. It was out of eye shot, but I could still hear it off in the distance. Think about that. Saw a family of foxes. They lived under a little ramshackle building. Probably not up to code, but it's okay if you're a fox. They lived under that shit. Bunch of little baby foxes, about 10 of them, hopping around. Their mom brought them a severed deer leg and just plopped it down on the floor and goes, here you go. And they just pounced all over it and they were fighting over it, rolling around, being all, oh man, it was one of the cutest fucking things I've ever seen. It was one of the just most beautiful. Come on. How do you top that? Then I'm supposed to go back to work. Then I'm supposed to like plug back into the internet and all this shit going on. Whatever. It's how it is. Anyway, we're back. We're back to life. Back to reality. I'm talking this week. Well, a couple of weeks ago, but this week you're going to hear me talk to Ben Wasserman. He's a New York comedian. Saw him perform a couple of weeks ago. Thought he was really funny, and he's been doing a lot of good work. Finally got to talk to him. You know how it is. People get busy. You play DM tag for a while, for a couple of weeks, and then you finally sink in and talk. And this was a fun talk. So strap in. It was cool. It was cool to finally pick his brain and let him jam. This podcast is a bit like a jam. We're kind of like the fish of podcasting. Ugh. Anyway, that's all I got. I want to just go to the episode now because, I'm running out of like room and vamping and shit to say, honestly, and I don't got much. It's springtime. Life's pretty good. Things are all right. I don't know, man. I'm trying to just live a life. Hope you're just living a life too. And get outside and try and not turn your phone off. Disconnect from the internet after you have downloaded this podcast, so you don't have to stream it. Download it to your phone. Put it on airplane mode. Go for a little walk. Maybe see a fox. If you can't see a fox in front of you in real life, just look up some pictures of them. That's good enough. You will probably need the internet for that, though. So, I don't know. This is tough. This is a tough one. I don't know what to tell you. Painted ourselves into a corner here, didn't we? Patreon.com/selfworst. Listen for bonus episodes and little video tutorials. I'm going to teach you how to do some handyman crap. Ben and I talk a little bit about handyman stuff at the top of this episode. We're both real good with our hands, if you know what I mean. And we both have an interest in building shit, fixing shit. And I'm going to share that interest with you on the Patreon. I'm going to do a little bit of Norm Abrams. Here's how to fix this shit, in case you're interested in that. So, go there. Click the link. A little is $1 a month. And you can get access. Do it. Please. I'm begging you. All right. That's all. You know where to find me. Social media and all that. Radical Pearson. I'm sure you... it's fine. Let's go to the interview with Ben Wasserman.
Yo.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how you doing? Sorry I'm late.
No worries, it's all right. We're all dealing with our schedules. What were you up to?
I was putting blinds in my ex's apartment, new apartment.
Okay. So you're that type of ex. You're all cool, or are you just kind of a sucker? Which
good question. am I all cool? I don't know if I'm all cool. We've been on and off-ish, talking and trying to figure stuff out for like the last year since we broke up. So yeah, I don't know. Somewhere in between sucker and cool, I think.
I get it. But, you know, if you got the handyman skills, right? It's sort of a thing you do.
It's something I can do. Yeah. So,
yeah. Which is nice. And honestly, like, I have a lot of that, too. I do a lot of that stuff. And when people ask me, how'd you learn it? My answer is kind of like, well, I was in my 20s and wanted to get laid.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely...
So I got really good at installing shelves and building IKEA furniture and shit.
Yeah, it definitely helps with that. With getting laid. Actually, I don't know if it's gotten me laid. I just didn't want to be in front of a computer for work anymore. Mm-hmm. That was most cool for me. Yeah.
So you're a carpenter, right?
I am a carpenter. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. How'd you get into that?
I was like DIYing some furniture for my apartment and stuff like that, and then I got fired from a customer service job, and after my unemployment and severance ran out, I was like, I really enjoy making furniture. What if I tried to just do this all the time? Mm-hmm. I took like a little workshop on woodworking and stuff. Like, it was like a 7-week intensive kind of daily program kind of thing. And then just sort of started working in shops. They like got me jobs in shops right after. And
yeah,
just been sticking with it for the last few years. Yeah.
You're a freelance, or are you at a studio or anything?
I am mostly freelance. I am freelance. I'm like sort of looking for full-time work. I like didn't have the scheduling to do it last year at all. But now I am in a better position where it would be nice to have a full-time job, because freelance sucks.
Yeah,
I'm owed like $2,000 from one shop for the last month and a half.
The bill collecting part, I think, is the thing that really has kept me away from most freelance work. Is just staying on top of that and being too knowing that I'm too like forgetful and ADHD to even like keep track really enough, and somehow I'm comfortable with some third party like payroll system keeping track and not, you know, getting wage thefted. I'm somehow okay with like a company just trusting it to them. I don't know.
Oh, I'm way, yeah. I'm like a, there are like two shops where I am on the staff and payroll, or now three, which is so nice, because even if I'm like only there, let's say 3 weeks every few months or something like that, based on a project, I am able to at least know that I'm on payroll and like I get paid at the end of the week, and then that's that. Anytime I have to like send invoices or hunt down checks, I just like, I lose steam. I get stressed. It's so annoying. Yeah.
And they want that. They're counting on you just like forgetting and just being like, ah, fuck it. And like, and then you let them win, and then that's even worse. It stings even worse.
Yeah. I don't let them win for sure.
Good.
But yeah, it is super stressful, and it would be nice to just be able to get paid on time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So I just saw you perform a couple of weeks ago at a show up at Brooklyn, and I thought you stole the show, man. Like, are you usually that, you know, kinetic of a performer? It was, you brought a lot of energy, and there was a lot of other guys. Not to knock them, but like there was a lot of other, you know, microphone stayed in the stand and just sort of you know, a very stoic sort of thing, and you brought a whole different vibe.
Yeah, I'm a show-stopping kind of performer, I think. I get, it's, what's the point if I'm not going to either steal the show or make a big fuss or something like that? So, yeah, I like being loud and energetic and memorable on stage, I guess. I just want to be remembered at the end of the show. Hopefully it's, like, the best set of the night kind of a thing. But, yeah, more than anything, it's just like, oh, that was different. So that's cool. Yeah. Thanks for saying that.
How'd you get into, comedy and performance?
Oh God. I went to an open mic 10 years ago. And nobody was funny, and I figured I could also not be funny.
Sounds like an open mic.
Yeah. And then I, went the next week. That was like a scouting thing. And then, a couple months later, I was like, all right, I'll try this. And then I went back there and killed with some stupid bit about how it was my first time trying comedy. And people were like, oh, you should come back to the open mic. And I was like, all right, I'll come back. Sure. And then I just kept going back. And then I made a friend or two. I like never really wanted to be a comedian. I don't know how it started, to be honest. Yeah, it's weird. I didn't. have dreams of this ever.
Interesting. Yeah, because most people you talk to in the comedy industry, they're like, they want it more than anything. They want it to like an irrational level to where like, you should quit. and they don't. And they're just like, no, man. And they just keep with it. And they just power through a sheer force of will.
Yeah. Yeah. I was bored, I think. I had recently gotten out of a relationship and was like looking to fill time, I think. And I was, when I finally went to the first open mic, it was just after I rescinded a couple applications from grad programs and turned one down where I had gotten accepted. And I was going to like study philosophy and teach philosophy and be an educator and do academia. And then I got really in my head about having to be smart, I think. And then and I got like, yeah, super stressed out about having to prove that I was smart. And I was like, what's the opposite of that? And
well, yeah, I mean, you decided to go with stand-up comedy, which is, I think, maybe the only thing that's less lucrative than a philosophy degree. I don't know.
I have managed to continually find passions that don't pay. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like anytime I hear somebody talk about how they left college or decided not to go to grad school, I'm like, honestly, you probably made the right call. Especially if you're like looking to go into academia, that shit's over. And there's like 9 jobs in the world for people who want to get into academia. And the rest of them are just running away from hundreds of thousands of dollars of loans. And
you
dodged that bullet.
I did get out at a good time. I had friends who were in programs getting their PhDs and like both seeing how miserable they were with the work itself. And then also that like, I don't know, their best option was going to be teaching in some fucking small town at a community college that, you know, they didn't even want to like live in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that alone was like enough for me to be like, oh, I'm not doing this. But then, yeah, I guess I was good enough before. I mean, the thing that I liked about academia most and teaching was like facilitating a group and talking to people. And so I guess comedy kind of just felt like, and performance sort of fell into it because it attracted me for the same reasons that other stuff attracted me, where I could like be front and center in a way.
So, I mean, you could say that, you know, comedians are kind of like modern day philosophers.
You could. I wouldn't, but you could. You could. I definitely wouldn't. But I mean, some of them definitely think they are.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's a lot better than what academia would have been.
How did you get Life After Death started? Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, the simplest story is I lost 7 people within the span of 3 years. Whoa. So my dad, my granddad, my uncle, and 4 friends all died within this 3-year span from 2017 to like the beginning of 2020, like just before COVID hit. And throughout those few years, I had been performing a lot of, in the throes of my grief, I was performing a lot of like grief based themes, obviously, and stuff about death and loss. And at a certain point I had enough material where I was like, oh, this could be a show. This could be like a fuller thing instead of just doing like 10 minute sets on other people's shows. I like workshopped it. Well, I was just talking to a friend about that first workshop, but I workshopped it at a DIY space in Brooklyn that's now closed. And people seemed to like it enough where I was like, oh, maybe I could just do this. And then I spent 2 years doing the solo show. Yeah.
Yeah. And you became the grief guy.
I became the grief guy in a way, or one of the grief guys. Yeah. Yeah, it's been, I'm still trying to get out of being the grief guy almost. I'm like, I still get calls from people about maybe bringing the show to their funeral home or cemetery or conference or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's weird having a thing that's been, that was relatively successful and good and liked, and also I don't have the taste for it anymore, really. At least not yet. I'm sure when more people in my life start dying again, I could always come back to it. But until then, yeah, I'm like more excited about not being the grief guy.
Yeah.
Whatever the next thing.
So you said you've kind of lost your taste for it. How did that, you just got burnt out on it? Or, I mean, I guess it can't be the most fun thing in the world to just talk about death and losing people when you're supposed to be going out and having a fun time.
Right. I mean, the show is definitely super fun and I always loved performing it. But yeah, I think so it was a very interactive show where like half of it would be me doing, you know, high octane kind of conceptual bits like what you saw at the show the other day, sort of type of thing about my own grief and experience or how I handled grief or how it felt or whatever. But then the other half of the show is super conversational. There's like a wheel, or there was a wheel that we would spin with different topics like last will and testament, funeral memories, whatever, you know, stuff like that. And then me and the crowd would have conversations during the show about like that topic and their own experiences. And so in that sense, it did get a little overwhelming by the time I stopped it. I mean, I'm always down to hear people's stories and to talk to them about this stuff, because I feel like at this point I'm pretty apt at doing that.
Yeah.
But back to back to back, I mean, 2 years in a row, and then the last 2 months of the show was like a national tour where I was doing a show every other night just about across the country. And yeah, that whole thing just exhausted. I mean, I was like self-producing it. So as a DIY artist, to self-produce the show and tour it, and with the content being as heavy, I think, as it was, I got super exhausted. And I almost didn't want to keep opening myself up to hearing other people's trauma. And a lot of how people would relate to me was through their trauma. Which like I'm here for, no judgment, we all have it, I think, to a certain extent, but I craved being able to meet people as like a person, as like just like a normal person, and like the trauma just coming out naturally in the midst of other fun stuff, instead of just being like, I miss all these people too, let's hang out or something. Like,
right.
Everyone I came up with last year because of the show, or who like came to the show and then hit on me or something, which like happened a lot of that. Not everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, but a bunch of those experiences were like couched in trauma bonding in a way that I didn't love. And so, yeah, for all those reasons, and I don't respect people who keep doing the same. Like, I know it worked. I knew the show was good. I would have lost respect for myself if I did it for a third year in a row. I think it's boring. Like, what else do I have in the tank? And it's been scary because I don't know if I have anything else.
That is always the fear, right? That's the anxiety of just like, what if I actually reach down for my quiver and there's no more arrows in there? And then I'm just like, oh,
yeah,
well, guess I'm not an artist anymore.
Yeah, it's been a trip, because about halfway, right the day before I left for the tour, so this was early September, I remember freaking out to a bunch of friends about how I didn't want to do it anymore, and I was scared it was going to be bad, whatever, like all normal kind of jitters about going on tour, I think, without being like a famous person. But more than that, I was already bored of the show, in a way. And I was scared. I was just like, okay, fine. I want to stop doing this, but I also don't know what's next. And I don't know if there needs to, like, halfway through the tour, I was like, oh, maybe I'm just done performing and done being an artist. And that's kind of okay with me. Like everything I accomplished with that show, in a way, I could be okay if I never have another show, but there's part of me that wants to be able to say, like, yep, I still got it. I could make something good. But yeah, it's scary thinking, oh no, did I already do my best?
Yeah.
Well, I hope not. And I don't think so, but some days I'm just like, well, that was really exceptional, and I can't force whatever's next. I've learned that.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. It's
hard because I think it's you centered a show around something that is of such substance, kind of you know, arguably the most, like, that's the gravest topic in the human experience, in a way, and like, so that's a huge emotional part of everybody's life.
Yeah,
that I can see how that would be hard to top, you know, like,
yeah, I've been thinking about it in terms of like, well, what's actually left, because Even though the show was explicitly about like death and grief and loss, you know, anyone who's experienced that stuff knows that you start thinking about any of it and you're bound to start thinking about life and love and job and money. And, like, all those things kind of get drawn in under that umbrella of topics. But yeah, I mean, I do think that the next show, I have plans for the next show and thoughts on the next show. And I think, you know, you did touch on something where it's like, I found a good rhythm and way of talking about these like big topics that are kind of integral to the human experience, even if it's in my own silly, goofy, whatever way. So I think the next show is going to actually be about like love and breakup and heartbreak and relationship.
That sounds good. I mean, that's another one that everybody goes through, and it feels like the end of the world when you go through it. I mean, it's such a profound experience, and everybody deals with it, and it's a universal experience, but it's all kind of different. And yeah.
It seems like equally fertile ground for me to kind of dig in and try and plant some ideas in. And I think there's something exciting to me about, I mean, I say heartbreak only because I've had a handful of it in the last year, but I think I'm most interested in trying to write a show about the good stuff about love and less about the heartbreak stuff, just because I want to challenge my, it feels easy to do stuff. It's easy for me to do comedy about stuff that makes people angry or upset or whatever, because I could be loud and shouty and antagonistic with the crowd or like whatever it is, and it all makes sense because of the topic being so dour in a way. But trying to translate what I do into something a little bit more joyous and celebratory excites me, and so that's the plan. But there is the fear that whatever it is sucks compared to whatever the last one was.
Would you say that in general you are a, you know, a more lighthearted person, or do you tend to be kind of gloomy?
I'm working on it. I think I definitely have a negative streak or tendency. I can be kind of negative about stuff in terms of, I recognize when I'm bitter. I recognize when I am pessimistic about something, and I've been actively trying to curb some of those tendencies. But I will say, I do think I am full of hope and a big optimist. I mean, I'm talking to my ex still, you know, like stuff like that. Even it's like Yeah, I have a lot of hope in the world in a lot of different, like both for myself and community and whatever. And so I try and operate in that sense. And I think generally I'm a happy, fun person, but there's definitely a bit of shit talking, spite and anger in me that like comes out. I don't know. Duality, two wolves.
Right, the two wolves. Yeah, walk me through a little bit more about your, you know, your mental health journey in general. Have you been to therapy? When did you start? All of that.
Yeah, I mean, I was in and out of therapy and therapists and psychiatrist's office as a kid. So as a kid, I was like super, super depressed. Coincidentally, very afraid of death for some reason. No one in my life died at that point.
Did you ever really get to the bottom of like what that might have been?
Idea. Yeah. No, I mean, I have some guesses, and I think I knew I was named after my grandfather who was dead. You know, and I think knowing that kind of shifted. Sorry, I gotta get my seltzer. But I think my grandfather, like knowing that I was named after him, and that he was dead and that my dad really liked him and stuff like that, there is something maybe in that that kind of like struck the fear of death into me. Like, oh no, I'm already a dead man.
Right.
Kind of a vibe. Like, oh no, they named me after a dead guy. I am a walking dead man. So that I think operated. And I think I just like, I don't know, I was scared. I still am scared. It, like, that hasn't changed. I just don't think about it as much as I did as a kid, which was quite a lot. But yeah, so in and out, I was super depressed as a kid, and I had, like, ADHD. And so my parents were constantly trying to figure out, how do we get this guy to calm down or be happy? And stuff like that. And then, I don't know, from like, I would say 10 or 11 to 19 almost, I was just fed so many different pills and antipsychotics and antidepressants, like just so many fucking different pills for so many different, who knows what the fuck they were doing. It's hard for me to remember a lot of that time in my childhood and like adolescence. And I think, and I trace it to all the pills that I was taking and being given, and like how much it just fucked with both my brain chemistry and my like physical chemistry. And it made me really unhappy. And so when I got to college, I stopped taking all whatever was prescribed to me. And then my freshman year, I had like, it was my dad's birthday lunch, and I came home, and it was I had a story due for the school paper, because at the time I was like a journalism student, I went to my first year, I went to this art school in New York, and I decided to be a journalism student, and I was into sports enough. And for some reason they like had they had sports programs at the school, at like for like the 13 jocks that were on campus. Like, there weren't that many athletes. But for some reason I lived with one of them. I lived with like I think he played volleyball. And he was talking about this rivalry with the school like a few miles away down the road or something, and how there was this like hot rivalry. And so I wanted to write a story about the upcoming season and the rivalry and all this stuff. And so I pitched it and it got approved. And then I like started doing the research on it. And I quickly realized no one at the school gives a fuck about sports. No one at the other school cared about this rivalry. Like, this rivalry did not exist. And I was at my dad's birthday dinner, or lunch rather, and I just like, I was freaking out at the table about how I'm going to write the story. How I'm going to write the story. What's the angle here? What's the angle there? And like, I had like my little notebook and like, I just wasn't in the moment. And then I walked into traffic in the middle of lunch, just like screaming, shouting, like, what am I going to do? I'm freaking out. And then the next day my parents took me, they're like, you're not going back to campus. And they took me to the psychiatrist who I was going to like throughout my adolescence and teenage years and stuff. And that dude diagnosed me with bipolar disorder, which my dad had, and then explained to me that as a kid, you know, we thought you were just like depressed and had ADHD and OCD. And I was like, OCD? I had OCD? When was anyone going to tell me that? And he was like, well, a lot of those diagnoses wind up turning into bipolar in, you know, or late teens, early 20s, whatever, young adult era. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I spent 6 months on like mood stabilizers and shit to try and even that out or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then same thing, my like brain and my body felt like shit. And it felt like I just didn't feel like a person. And so I just stopped taking them and refused to go back to see the psychiatrist. And honestly, I think, you know, I still get depressed and I definitely have depression, and it comes in its waves, and I still get manic sometimes. I don't know if I'm not bipolar or not, but I don't know, that was 19. Yeah. So in the last like 17 years, I have found that I'm able to, manage, control myself without both medication and therapy. I've like, it's not that I don't trust. I think therapy is really great for people who find value in it and use it and can. But it's been hard. The few times that I've seen therapists in the last 17 years, I haven't really enjoyed it. And it doesn't give me the same kind of emotional clarity that like talking to a friend does, or a family member. I'm like very good at being vulnerable with people, and open and sharing and not being embarrassed with my friends. And so, you know, don't use your friends as therapists kind of a thing, but I have nurtured relationships where, I am able to like process and work out in real time with people who I really care about and who I know care about me. And that has felt a lot better than the couple times I've tried doing therapy. Yeah.
I mean, I think based on what you're telling me, it's kind of amazing that you don't have more of a distrust of therapy and pharmaceuticals, because it seems like your experience would really leave a bad taste in someone's mouth. And unfortunately that happens a lot. And, you know, people will finally come around to going to therapy, you know, after sort of resisting it, and then have a bad experience, and then that just walls them right off. And they're like, okay, so that is bad and not for me. Time to try and get some sort of sense of meaning and order out of, you know, oh, look, a cult, you know, or something else that's really going to take advantage of people's need for something like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I mean, it's partly, I think, the optimism or whatever, but I don't like counting anything out just because I've had a bad experience or whatever. And I understand therapy working for other people. And so it's not like I'm never going to get on a soapbox and start saying therapy bad. I mean, I do think pharmaceutical industry is bad.
Sure.
Right. I like over medication is real. Yes. And I think some therapists are obviously very bad. But I see how it works for other people. And I have tried, I mean, with my ex, my ex wanted to do couples therapy a few times within our relationship. And my distrust definitely came up then. We did wind up going to therapy after we broke up, but Yeah, no, that's the right face to make.
For what was the goal there?
I don't know if there was a goal so much as trying to find a way both to process our breakup and also see if there was an opportunity to get back together.
Did he recommend installing blinds?
Yeah, she was like, you know what you need to do for each other? You need to put blinds in her home. No, I mean, you know, we went to like 7 sessions and we did good work in terms of like breaking down some of our communication patterns, but we also never really got to like the nitty gritty of stuff that like wasn't working within the relationship beyond our communication, or that like we were both individually going through or whatever. So yeah, I mean, that was like a whole fucking thing, but I did do it. So I'm not like totally against it. It's just mostly not for me, I think.
So you mentioned that you've sort of learned how to manage it on yourself. How do you do that? What sort of tools have you learned for self-regulation?
I mean, the biggest one is thinking about how I feel. I do a lot. I mean, sometimes it's like overthinking, and more recently actively trying to work on that, and maybe think less about how I feel and my life. And like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people would probably benefit from remembering that they're not so special. And I would know I would definitely benefit from remembering I'm not so special and not so unique, and everyone's got their own shit and stuff like that. But thinking, allowing myself to think and feel what I'm feeling instead of just being overwhelmed by it, like actually holding these things up and looking at them and interrogating why I'm feeling a certain way, talking about it with people has been huge. I meditate. I smoke a lot of pot, which is part of, I think, my self-regulation too.
Sure. I mean, look, I smoke weed too, but, and like, I don't, I know that it's not like the best way of dealing with life, but it's also not the worst, you know, it's fine. Yeah. It's, I don't over rely on it. I don't think I'm pretty straight about it with like my therapist and people close to me, like, yeah, how much I consume and all of that. And I'm pretty, I think so long as you're, realistic about how much it can actually do for you, that it's not a panacea, you know, that like, it's really only going to kind of like elevate your mood temporarily. It's not going to fix your problems, you know, stuff like that.
I wouldn't say the weed is really the, a regulator so much as I find that I don't get as worked up as maybe I used to about stuff because I have like some pot in me or whatever. But I mean, really the biggest thing for me has been allowing myself to feel what I feel and think about what I feel and sharing that with other people and trying to make sense of it. And just get clear understandings of where I'm at and why I'm feeling a specific way, or what is hurting me about something, or why am I actually stressed right now? And like, I have found that having that clarity, having those moments where I try and clarify, lead to calm as well. And brushing things off is not being so dramatic or important. I've been called drama queen by so many people in my life. And I hate it. And like, I just don't.
Do you overreact? Are you a big overreact? Or do you have like a chase lounge or a fainting couch or anything in your apartment?
No, but
do you
I
get the vapors.
I don't get the vapors, but I react. Okay. I can be reactionary. Sure. And I know, and I recognize that I can be impulsive, particularly with what I think or feel. And like that winds up leading me to do stupid shit or things that I wind up regretting. more often than not.
Do you have rage blackouts? Are you one of those?
I don't get rage blackouts.
This is a safe place. Safe space for. There's no judgment of the rage blackout. Yeah. But.
No, I don't get rage blackouts. I did a lot of over drinking in the last year in a way that, like, in the last couple months, I've been active. Another thing that I'm actively working to curb, or manage, yeah. I guess. So not rage blackouts, but I have had way too many drunk blackouts,
right,
for a 36-year-old. And alone, just like in my home, blacking out in my home alone with the cats is like, again, it's on there, up there with drama queen, where it's like, I don't want this. I don't want to be known as the guy who blacked out at home. And just because I can drink a lot doesn't mean it's good for me.
Yeah, that is a big part of, the impetus for me, like, getting my shit together mentally is, like, I do not want to be the guy who, his laptop breaks and he punches a hole in the wall or something, you know? Like, I do not want to be that guy. The world does not need any more fucking red-faced, angry white men. Really doesn't. Pretty good on that. So,
yeah. And
it's embarrassing that, like, you know, it's embarrassing and shameful, like, that I get that heated sometimes. Hasn't happened for some time, but, like, just knowing that, like, oh my God, I'm the guy who fucking did that. And, like, I screamed at some person cause they told me not to lock my bike up against their fence or something. And like, now I'm that guy to them. Like, fuck, man. Yeah. Sucks.
Yeah. It sucks. It's like, I would say my biggest motivation for fixing myself in the variety of ways that I have, or like even why I do the comedy that I do and how I do, it's like I see people in the world that I don't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work with a lot of my comedic persona comes from working with like a bunch of angry Brooklynites when I was in my early 20s. And just taking in people who were just seem to wake up upset.
Yeah.
Like wake up with not only like a chip on their shoulder, but like truly furious, or their only way to interact was through like ire or something.
And they wake up and they already have that little like red hash mark thing from the anime on their forehead.
Yeah, they just got like a crazy vein popping already. Yeah. And so like, I remember recognizing that and being like, I want to be angry less. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be that guy.
Oh, your cat is really for the listener. Ben's cat is doing a handstand and showing their genitals to me. Which,
upside down hey, cat. Thanks. Yeah.
Wow.
That's queen. We're going to angle away from you. Queen.
Speaking of stealing the show.
Truly trying to steal the show, I think a lot of it is like I see people and I don't like I see bad comedy and I don't want to do that. I mm-hmm. see true drama queens, or I hear myself talking and I'm like, fuck that is crazy, dude, you gotta chill out. And I just don't. I have a pretty good sense of self-worth and self-image.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a pretty cool guy, and I'm a sweet guy, and a nice person, and a hot dude, and all these sorts of things. And I think about how other people sometimes see me or have seen me as being bitter, snippy, mean, dour or sad or like whatever it is. And I just hate that, the dissonance between how I see myself and how I think I'm presenting sometimes.
Yeah.
Really upsets me and is like the number one motivator for me, like trying to correct or just be a better person for myself.
Yeah. And it's hard to know like when to let that go or when to try and like, redeem yourself to certain people and mm-hmm. like help them maybe like improve or improve their perception of you versus like, I think this person just thinks I'm an asshole and I guess I'm just going to have to live in the world with that.
And yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a tightrope to be walked between, fuck you, you don't get me, and also, well, I want you to like me, yeah. kind of a thing. And like, I'm in a good place now, I think, where I'm not clamoring for people to like me as much, or hoping for that. I don't care as much if I'm pretty, again, I'm pretty happy with who I am as a person. And it's like, if you get me, you get me.
That's the secret ingredient, is if you actually kind of like yourself okay, then you're okay with people thinking you suck. You know, like, it bothers you less. You're like, well, I mean, you're wrong, but sure, whatever. Yeah, go nuts. I'm a dick. I'm an asshole. Fuck you.
Right. Okay. You think I'm just like a bitter guy? You obviously don't listen, or you're not paying attention, or whatever. And oftentimes I find that the people who I don't vibe with or who don't vibe with me or like whatever, it's like, it's not meant to be. I'm a very, it is what it is and it has to be how it's been kind of person. And so I don't really hold much care anymore in a way that even like 2 years ago, 3 years ago I did.
Yeah. When you, talk to your friends about, you know, stuff that you're going through, and I'm not saying you are, but do you feel like you're like burdening them? Because that is usually what stops me like dead in my tracks from ever wanting to do that, being like going to somebody and being like, can I confide in you? I have a problem. Like, I can't do it, so I have to fucking foist it all on some poor therapist.
Yeah. I what's the word, trauma dumping? Yeah, I have had moments of being worried about that I'm burdening people or whatever. I am constantly asking friends if it's too much. Or I'm more a few months ago, I've had a very wild romantic year. A couple months ago, I was talking to a friend, me and one of my close friends who doesn't live in Brooklyn anymore. We talk for like a few hours once a week and just like catch up and just bullshit or whatever. And in the last year or so, especially, most of these chats, it'll be like an hour of talking about projects we're working on and stuff like that and just life and catching up. And then the next hour and a half has been spent like, well, here's what's happening with the ex, and here's what's happening with this person and this lover and this, you know, whatever. And I remember a few months ago saying something to him about how like, dude, next time we talk, I'm not bringing any of this love shit up. And I'm not bringing any of this, like, it just feels crazy that this is my life. And like, so it's less, I think, about being a burden and more in the same way that the comedy is like, I don't want to be boring. And I don't want to do a thing that you've seen before or heard before or something. It's like, I want to have new shit to talk about with you or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, I rarely feel like a burden, but also I think all my friends know that I'm there for that. You know, it's like, it's a very reciprocal kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing like having a friend be like, your life is crazy, which is on par with the drama queen shit, where I'm just like, okay, yeah, maybe I'm just doing too much. Like, maybe I need to curb how many people I'm dating or hooking up with, and maybe I need to curb how often I'm going out and what situations I'm putting myself in. Less because it's like capital B bad, but more just because I don't want to be the guy who's like constantly in the throes of some like confusing romance or some kind of like wild shit. You know what I mean? It's like, but I don't feel like a burden. And I think good friends are hard to come by, but when you have the right friends and the good people, it's like, what else are you going to talk about except for the shit that's going on in your life and what you're feeling and thinking?
I remember when I was in my like late 20s, early 30s, I was going through like, I was in a relationship that was kind of, it was not going to work out, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, A, I don't want to be the guy who's like still talking about his fucking girl problems with his friends. And B, like, we're all mutual friends with each other. And so to like have these, like, I don't know if things are working out with us. And then we just like go to the barbecue the next week and we're just arm in arm. And like, it never felt right. I was just like, well, then if I tell them that I'm thinking that this might not work out, then that makes it real. And then I can't just show up with them like like nothing happened, because my friends are all going to know that I don't think this is working.
Yeah.
So I don't fucking tell anybody.
Right. Yeah. No, I have gotten myself to a point where, and I guess this goes with like sort of the impulsive thing that I was talking about before, but I've gotten myself to a point where I feel okay saying some shit to a friend about how I'm feeling or what I'm thinking, and then the next week being like, all right, so I thought more about it, and actually, I really like them, or I can't do this anymore, or I don't want a full-time job, or like whatever it is. And I think, I don't know, I think there is a lot of shame. There's a lot of shame in that I think people feel about being wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe being, or not being sure. I think that's the big thing. And I've experienced this from other people mostly. And it is a terror, when people have you in their life, but they're unsure of things and they're scared of being vulnerable because they're not sure if they can even like own or identify with something that they're thinking or feeling in a given moment. And like, yeah, it was really freeing. I forget where I read it, and it was while I was doing philosophy, but then I came back to like reading some of this stuff. Like even a few years ago, I was cleaning out my apartment and I found all these old like notebooks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had written down, I don't remember who said it, I don't know if it was a professor or it was in a book or something, but someone was like, the mark of a philosopher or something, which is lame, but the mark of someone wise or a genius or something is not identifying with the thought or feeling they have, but being able to just hold it and look at, like, entertain it, kind of a thing. And that was pretty crucial for me, and kind of just being like, oh, I'm allowed to be wrong about how I feel. I'm allowed to change my mind about things. There's no shame in me saying today, you know, for example, I don't think I should keep seeing so-and-so or something, and that I need to end this relationship with them. And then the next week being like, so I had some time to think about it and I hung out with them and I feel good about this thing, and maybe I want to keep going. And like, yeah, I think a lot of us stop ourselves from sharing and being vulnerable because we're not sure if it's how we really feel, or we're not sure if it's something that other people can hold, even. And I guess I just don't buy it. And I have a lot of trust and faith in people and in the world, I think. And like, I trust that my friends can handle it. And I trust that if they couldn't, they would say something. Sure. And I've definitely had one or two friends say like, you know, you're always complaining or you're, oh, this or that. And like, one of them I'm not really even friends with anymore. And not even because of that, just, time, really. But like, it does shift how I've thought about things, where it's like, yeah, wait, I don't want to be the complainer. But most of the time they're not saying that, and most of the time space is being made for me and I'm making space for other people.
Yeah.
And we'd all probably benefit if we gave each other a little bit and ourselves like a little bit more grace, in that kind of uncertainty.
Yeah, it's a good way of looking at it. And I think most people are okay with people complaining as long as they get a sense that that person is doing something about the thing that they are complaining about. You know, like as long as it feels like they are proactively doing something, you know, like, oh, I always feel tired and always feel like shit. Okay, well, what's your lifestyle like? Are you staying out until 4 every morning? Are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating like shit? Are you not exercising? And if you're doing all of that, like that, like take some steps and be like, oh man, yeah, so I started doing spinning classes and that's really hard, but okay, cool. Now you're gonna complain about a new thing, but at least you're doing something that is proactive, right?
Totally. Nobody wants just a complainer who's like kind of inert or whatever or static. But yeah, I mean, I feel really thankful that, and I guess it goes with, when you vibe with people, you vibe with people, and when you don't, you don't. And so fuck the people you don't. But I feel really thankful for my chosen family and the friends that I've cultivated and the community that I've created, where like we have each other and we hold each other, and we hold up each other in like powerful ways and small ways. And like, whether it's just being able to talk about some shit or fuck, I can't afford groceries this week. Let's cook, like I'll cook a meal for you kind of a thing. Yeah, that's been huge. I don't think everyone has it, and I think it's hard to open yourself up to that kind of vulnerability with friends, because like you still want to seem cool to your friend. It's like it's this weird thing where it's like you want to seem cool to your friends, you want to seem like you got it all together, but none of us are cool and none of us have it all together. And it's more disingenuous. It would feel disingenuous to not be honest about where I'm at with the people closest to me. I'm just thankful that they haven't abandoned me for it.
I mean, I think one of the things that you're doing that is so difficult, and like I've had difficulty with it too, is holding the thought and really going in and exploring it without letting it kind of, what do they call it in therapy or mindfulness? It's non-identification. You know, you take on the feeling, but you don't let it steer the ship or like become you, like the you don't let the narrative become your reality, you know, and that can be difficult because if you are somebody who has these like big feelings, particularly like let's say self-negative feelings, then it is really easy if you are trying to examine a feeling of embarrassment or shame or like you fucked up without just internalizing it and then just going with, well, I'm a fuck up, I'm embarrassing, I'm bad. And just locking on to that, you know, because that is what your whole like body and soul is telling you to believe, you know? And so like to hold on to something else, you know, as that current sort of goes around you, can be really hard and like to like hold on and not get washed up in it.
Yeah, it's a constant practice. It's a practice, right? And it's an activity itself, I think. It's not to say that I don't get caught up, and it isn't sometimes steering the shit, like a feeling or whatever, or a thought isn't steering the ship, and I kind of a thing. I'm definitely in those. I find myself in those moments, but I try and take care to pause and reflect when I find that happening, and kind of redirect the ship, so to speak. But yeah, it's super tough. I don't, but I it's hard to, I don't, I in the same way I don't want to be a drama queen or whatever, I don't want to be someone who thinks that they're shitty. Like, I don't I don't want to have a negative self-image. I don't think I have reason to. And even though there are some days where I will be feeling a certain way about my comedy career or my carpentry career or my love life and how not everything is really where I want it, because it's certainly not, but I don't know anyone who has everything where they want it. And I have had enough experience thinking I want something and then learning I don't, or thinking I want something and then doing it and then learning I don't, or feeling good about doing it and feeling complete, like with the solo show, that ran me through like the ringer for a while, just in like thinking about doing it and how it had to be so big and important and special and good and successful, and I wanted it to be on Off-Broadway and I wanted it to be in theaters and I wanted to get a Netflix special and I thought I deserved it. And that, like, for the first few months I was doing it, it ate at me about when will this happen and when will this break and whatever. And like going into the second year of doing the show, I still was like, when are people going to pay attention and when am I going to get my flowers and this and that. Mm-hmm. And like, and then I don't know what, I don't think there was any one thing that really just happened, but I think like something clicked in my brain where I was like, well, I wanted to do the Netflix special and the Off-Broadway show and this and that or whatever. But instead what I'm getting is like, what I have is an incredible show that makes me feel so good performing and doing, and makes other people obviously feel so good or heard or realized or in community or whatever. And then I have, after every show, aside from the people who would like hug and cry with me, and like come up and thank me for creating the space and the show and like whatever to be able to share and do that, which like, I don't know many comedians or performers who have gotten that after a show, who have like truly like, hey, thanks for coming to town, like that was so funny. But thank you, this is needed and this is important, or thank you, I personally really need it, like whatever. That like when it clicked that like that's really cool and that's really special and not everyone gets that, I was like fucking who needs Off-Broadway or whatever, I'm performing in funeral homes and cemeteries, I'm like the only guy doing this. So many people are on Off-Broadway or Broadway with shitty fucking shows, no one is doing what I'm doing, that's cool. And like it helped reorient my self-image of like, okay, well I wasn't successful in that other kind of bracket of getting a Netflix special or something, but I have enough people who are interested in like filming this and and helping me self-produce it that like that's even more cool. Or like I'm getting DMs from people I still to this day. I mean, last week I got someone reached out to me who was at one of my shows over the summer, and their mom was sick when they came to the show, and their mom just died. And I got this message from someone last week or 2 weeks ago that they had to like run out of their house to go down to their mom because she was like dying in hospice, and they had to like drive back home or like whatever. I think they were in Vermont or something. But they got back to their like family home to take care of their mom in like her last week or whatever it was, and the bag that they packed to go back home, it was the same bag that they had brought to my show. And they had during the show I would throw tissues out, it was like a fake tissue sponsorship,
right,
for the show, because sometimes people cry, and they like sent me a picture of the tissue pack and they were like, my mom just died, I had no idea that this tissue pack was in the bag I brought, but when I was like going through my bag, I pulled out the pack of Tony's tissues, and I'm thinking about your show 8 months later, now with this like new chapter, and I can't thank you enough for it. And like that to me, that kind of message is worth 10 Netflix specials.
Yeah.
In terms of my self-worth, like I'm just yeah, it is it's been super powerful to be able to reorient what makes me happy and to accept that like it would still be nice to get a Netflix special, but this is cool and this is good enough. And sometimes like the good enough thing I think is what helps me with my self-image and not getting too down about me not being successful or this or that. It's like, no, I'm actually pretty successful. I did a huge thing. People like me. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's hard not to sometimes get carried away by it and sometimes let it just sort of like let that anxiety direct you about like, well, why aren't people right? I think I got one review for my show and I wanted way more.
Right.
And I was bet like I was reaching out to agents and journalists and managers and theaters, like all sorts of people from the first year of the show, endlessly trying to get more like industry buzz or support or whatever. And it just, people weren't doing it. New York Times comedy critic did come to the show. It was one of the better, I mean, like every show was really good. This was undeniably like one of the best shows, like a top five show for sure, or performance of it. Because it was just like a wacky wild night, and some of the audience members were like so game and so good. It was a stunning night, and everyone who was there was like, this is amazing. And then I had followed up being like, so are you gonna write about the show? And I never heard back. And then like 3 months later, he put out a piece about grief comedy and how so many people are doing shows about death and grief or whatever.
Right.
And I got one sentence in this like
Just at the
very
end.
long.
Also, this Ben Wasserman guy does it too, so who cares?
And I mean, I was like, my anxiety about getting this guy to just respond to my emails for so long or to show interest, and then he finally fucking came. And then all I got out of it was one sentence, and I was like, well, I guess that's cool, but like, even if he wrote a review, I don't think I would have cared. And fuck the New York Times.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, but being able to reorient what provides the worth and the value, and being okay, it's the same thing. I was wrong. I'm fine admitting I was wrong for thinking a review or buzz was what I needed when I had already amassed everything I had need like that I felt like I needed, which was proving I was funny as shit, proving I was able to create a genius show. Like a big show, proving to myself that I could like fucking produce it and book it and convince these non-traditional spaces to let me do it. And like connecting with people, making connections with people, like connecting with people and making the people in my crowd feel like they were part of something special. Yeah, I don't know. I would tell friends when I was writing it or workshopping it, that like I wanted to make a show that would leave a bug in people's brains or like a lump in their throat for the next couple of days. Like just I wanted it to stick with people. It's the same thing. I wanted to be memorable. I wanted it to be something that people would hold on to for a little bit. Whether it was like so brilliant or not, it's just I don't want you to forget about it once you walk out of the door, kind of a thing. And when people started texting me or sending me messages like a few days or a week after the show to thank me or to say how much they loved it or like whatever, I think I like that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
I didn't want Netflix. I didn't want, like, I did the thing I wanted to do. And that was so freeing to recognize. And I think did shift a lot of how I think about my life in other kind of domains, right? Like my love life now, I think, or at least how I think about my romantic life, has shifted a lot since being able to recognize some of the stuff that I got out of the show. But yeah, I mean, it's all a project and a journey and all that kind of hokey bullshit.
Yeah. Hell yeah. It's gotta be, I mean, keeping something like that in perspective so far as like recognition, you know, from the press or whatever, not so much like the people who have actually seen it. You know, when you do a show that is about something as crazy as grief, and it's a show about, like, you just talked to a, you know, a dozen people at your show who lost everything. They lost the most important yeah. person in their life, in their world. And yeah. then to like go kvetch about like how the New York Times didn't, you know, like I can see how like that it's easy to like have a perspective just like, well, there are more important things. And that's sort of like the theme of the show, that like this is a lot bigger. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the same way that there are more important things than having a New York Times write up or a Netflix special for my comedy show, there are more important things in life than my possible shame in sharing how I feel with a friend, you know, like, why? Yeah, I don't, I no longer subscribe to allowing myself to be bogged down by both fear or self-doubt or negativity or whatever. I just don't, I will never get anything I want when I want it if I like don't think I deserve it and I don't think I can do it.
Yeah.
And like, I think thinking about my priorities or what I want has been helpful, but also just like giving myself the grace to like learn, change, adapt, and feel good about myself has been gigantic. Like, and that really has only come within, in some ways, within the last year, even like 8 months less. Like, yeah, it wasn't until last fall where I think I really started to like, it was while I was on tour where I really took stock of everything in my life. And I was like, actually, I'm doing pretty good. I'm pretty good. I've always like loved myself, but there's a difference between loving yourself and feeling good about yourself and like accepting it, and being proud of it. Yeah. And like now I'm in a place where I am incredibly proud of who I am, and that's, it makes me feel unshakable and immovable in a way, which is, it feels powerful to like, yeah, I don't know, feel good about who you are. What a blessing.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta tell me what that's like. I mean, whatever that must be like, you know, you gotta bottle that and sell it. That's gonna be your next thing, because
yeah,
that, I mean, is not an easy thing to do.
It's not an easy thing, but you can do it. And like it's so doable, and it really is just like, it just is a mindset shift, I think, and it's just, it's both giving yourself the grace to like yourself and also like not being ashamed to like yourself. I think there's like a weird, I don't know. I think there is this weird relationship to self-love or something, where like, and like, look, we can make fun of people who are constantly talking about self-care and so important, and oh, yeah, you gotta light your candles and you have to take your bubble bath and you just have to have like a me night and whatever, and like, yes, you do need all that, and like, it's good, but I do think, like, yeah, people, I don't know, they look, there is judgment that gets made on people who feel good about themselves or feel confident or whatever, and it's like, what makes you think you're so special? And it's like, I don't think I'm so special. I'm as much of a shithead as anyone else, but like, just because I'm just because I can be as unfunny as anyone at the open mic, why, like, that shouldn't stop me from trying. Like, we're all unfunny here. We're all fucking a little unwell. We're all worth loving. I don't, why choose the bad one? Like, if I don't have to choose the negative thought, which sometimes you do, or sometimes it feels like I have no choice in the matter, and that, like, well, I'm just gonna be sad about this thing. I'm just gonna feel like I am a bad person because when I, so with like my drinking, like the last year, my like trend was I would buy a bottle of mezcal, I would get home and cook dinner, which is great. It's good. So important to cook for yourself. Mm-hmm. I love cooking. And I would finish half a bottle within like 3 hours, just like swigging it while cooking. I would like have friends over for dinner, and by the time that they came, I would be hammered. And like, I have woken up hungover. I have woken up realizing I blacked out, and been so embarrassed and ashamed of just like the act of that. And at the same time, I have yet to sit with myself and thinking about that, or like those regrets or like whatever, in the next day and be like, I'm such a piece of shit, I'm a terrible person or whatever. Like, I think I made mistakes. I have habits and tendencies of going a little ham sometimes. Even that set, the set the other night that you saw, I had met up with a friend and had a couple drinks before coming to the show. Right. And then by the time I went up, so like I already had like three, or well, actually, I think they were beer and shot specials. Yeah. So I already had six drinks technically by the time I got there, and then they gave me a drink ticket, and then they gave me an extra one because someone didn't want to drink before their set or something, and then they had to go. And so like by the time I went on stage, I guess I was like eight drinks deep or whatever, and I remember saying something like, I am so drunk right now, everybody. And like I remember getting off stage and being like, I'm kind of embarrassed that I said I'm so drunk or whatever. But then I also had enough people coming up to me being like, that was so good, dude, or whatever, where I was like, yeah, I don't have to identify with being the guy who had, like, I had fun. I wasn't unsafe. I wasn't unhealthy. I didn't do anything stupid later that night. I didn't hurt anyone. I didn't hurt myself. I woke up clear-headed and not hungover. And, like, even though I probably would have preferred not to be as hammered on stage or whatever and like slurry, I can like live with that. And I think like I recognizing that my drinking can sometimes be much without wanting to say, like, and look, I still drink. It's like, alcoholic? I don't know. But I'm not interested in like quitting drinking for sure. And I don't think I need that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, sure. Maybe moderation, definitely not every day going hard. But I also don't like, I just don't see the value. I haven't seen the value in beating myself up over this thing that has just happened. And like, it is what it is. For whatever reason, I had to be that drunk that night because it happened, and it couldn't have gone any other way because that's the way it went. And what I can do today is be like, oh, if I have a show later, maybe I'm not going to have six drinks before showing up or whatever. And like, That feels way better than any of the times that I've beat myself up for doing some stupid shit or feeling a way about something or like not feeling good enough. I don't know. But I do think anyone can do it because it is just a mindset thing where it, like, for whatever reasons you feel shitty about yourself, you probably have the same amount to feel good about yourself. And it's truly a choice. It's like the cat with the whatever food. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm.
Maybe I'm making something up.
Is that a meme?
Cat no, with, it's cat like a, food? A metaphor or a thought experiment or something where it's like a starving cat, two bowls of the same amount of food or something. Like, which one does it go for? Some shit like that. Right. I don't forget this analogy. But I do think it's true that, like, for whatever reason you feel bad about yourself, you probably have a corollary, like, the inverse of that, or the converse, to feel good about yourself. And it is just an option. Like, it's one of two choices. And I think a lot of people make the choice to feel bad. I think there's, like, something cool and sexy and dark for some reason to feeling kind of bad. I think we respect for some reason, we respect people more who like have a negative self-image because it makes it seem like they're being realistic or they're not getting too full of themselves or whatever. And it's like, there's a medium where you don't have to be miserable and you can feel happy with who you are without being a jerk about it. And like, yeah, if I have the choice to feel good or bad about something, I would prefer to feel good. And so why not make that choice? Like, I'm going to feel bad. I know I'm going to feel bad. I already, if I'm in that moment where I'm like looking at two options and I'm like, well, yep, I hooked up with this person that I broke up with several months ago because I knew it wasn't going anywhere. And then one night we started talking again and got a couple drinks in and then we hooked up again. And well, I can look at myself the next day and be like, this was really stupid of me and this was bad and I am playing a dangerous game and this and that. Or I can look at it and be like, well, hold on. I'm an adult. They're an adult. We both know the context of this. We talked about this while we were hanging out. We decided that hooking up would be fun. It objectively was fun. I had a nice time. Why do I have to sit here on Saturday all day stewing over why I did that Friday night when I can just be like, hey, I did something Friday night. If I don't want to do it again, if like the negative thoughts about it, like, oh, maybe I'm leading someone on or maybe I'm wasting my time because I know it's not going to be blossom into a full relationship or something like that. Like, I don't need to sit with negative shit. Like, I don't think anyone does, but I do think that we've developed a culture that for some reason prizes that more and then also tries to downplay it. Or not downplay. I think we prize the negative self-image in a way because it makes people feel a little bit more comfortable because it's like, oh, well, this person doesn't have a hot head or whatever it is. But then we're also constantly being like, feel better about yourself, this or that. But we're like valorizing people with the negative self-image almost, or like self-deprecation or whatever it is. Like, I hate self-deprecation.
Yeah.
It feels, especially from comedians. Like, ugh. There's nothing worse than a comedian starting their set and like saying some like trite shit like, I know what you guys are thinking. I'm like, what if an ugly guy fucked an ugly girl and then they had a kid and that's me because I'm so fucking hideous or right. Whatever. It's like, I don't want to pay attention because now you're ugly to me. Before you just looked like a person, but now right. You're an ugly person and I can't watch this. And yeah, there's just something like that to me is more distasteful than someone being like, I feel good moving along.
Like,
yeah,
I feel like I can do like, I can do kind of what you're saying where like, I can make fun of myself and, you know, make fun of my big old curly head and everything. And just be like, yeah, you look like this, you look like that, you know, but I also don't put that much stock in it. Like, I just, I'm like, it's like, okay, fine. So like, yeah. I don't look like Ryan Gosling. Damn, that sucks. Only very few people do. And I don't need to like let it bug me.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think self-worth is a thing that I think is so easy to feel once, but it has to click. Like, something has to click first where you're just like, oh, wait, I can do this. Like, you just have to think you can do it, and then I think you can. Or at least in my experience, anytime I have told myself I want to do something and I can do it and I will do it, I don't know a time where I haven't done it. I can't name a thing that I didn't fucking do when I just had a kernel of an idea, whether that was like starting a philosophy and social justice education program for like middle schoolers when I was like 22, whether that was the solo show, whether that mm-hmm. was like falling in love with someone. I think it's so, I don't know. We scare ourselves out of doing so many things and out of feeling such the good stuff that maybe it is getting older and more tired, and I just feel a little burnt out on the self-hate I have had over the years. But, like, yeah, in the last couple of years, for sure, but definitely the last year, I just, like, I have no more patience for my own bullshit. And that's, like, again, not to say that I don't have bullshit, and not to say that I don't spend 2 hours talking about the, you know, six different people I'm seeing with my friends and trying to figure out, like, do they like me? Am I getting back together with my ex? What am I fucking talking about? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? Why am I seeing this person again? I've already established I don't like that, like, whatever. And it's like, I have my own shit. Like, we all do. I can be annoyed that I'm not booked as much as other people in the city, even though every time I do a show, I'm the best fucking guy on the lineup or whatever it is, right? Like, it pisses me off. It doesn't make me feel any worse because I do know when I am booked, I'm going to put it all out. Like, I'm going to have the set of the night, probably. And so, like, I don't need to do that. I don't know. I don't need to go crazy about what? Not being on a show that is going to have seven people there? Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, reorienting things has been super helpful, and recognizing that a lot of it is just a choice.
There we have it, folks. Depression is a choice. And if you feel bad, it's your fault.
Kind of. There's like, there was a tweet that went around like last year or something. I forget. I sent it to a friend of mine who was like, really, I was like, I agree with this. And she was like, okay, this hurts me because I think I do this or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember what it was. I'm sure I could find it. Let me see if I have it in these texts, because it didn't alter my brain chemistry, but like, it was another thing that kind of helped me reassess how I feel and what I think and all of that. Okay, wait, here it is. Is this it? Okay, I think I deleted it for some reason, but either way, it was something like, y'all be thinking about yourselves too much or something like that. I think it's something as simple as that, but it was right. Just like, yeah, no, totally. I think it is a choice in how we, I don't think being depressed is necessarily a choice.
Right.
Because I think there's a lot of both physiological reasons for that and environmental, whether it is upbringing or current context or like whatever.
Sure.
You know, and like
trauma, there's brain chemistry, there's all of that stuff, but there are choices that you do make on a daily basis that I think, I agree. Like, there is a bit of a, relinquishing of agency that I think some people have that does not help. And
mental
health, mental illness, you know, I'm not the one who coined this. I don't remember who said it, but mental illness is not your fault, but it is your responsibility. You know,
yeah.
And so, like, if you are struggling with it, then that is your chance to take some agency and take some responsibility and do something about it. Because otherwise, you're just a complainer, and nobody likes that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think, like, look, you're going to be depressed. You have every reason in the world to feel like shit. Like, the world sucks. Capitalism's real.
It's pretty bad.
People are weird and annoying and upsetting and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But how much we let things get to us and how much stock to put into some of that stuff, I think, is definitely a choice. And, like, to the extent that we can mitigate and make other choices, I try to. And it has fixed me in a way.
Make better choices. It's like that diet food in the 90s. Healthy choice. Make a healthy choice. Make a healthy choice today.
We should
wrap up, but this has been super lovely. Ben Wasserman, tell the people where to find you and your work.
Oh yeah, where to find me? I guess I'm on Instagram at Ben Wassergram. I don't really tweet much anymore, but I'm there at Ben Wasser Tweet. And how to find my work? I mean, I think there's an email list on my website at benwassermancomedy.com. But everything I'm about to. New projects and stuff will be announced on Instagram.
Yeah, whatever this next project is, that better be good.
Yeah, new show. I got a series of emotional workbooks coming out by the end of next month. The first couple should be on. Maybe you need the anger one. I'll send you a copy. but fun, interactive workbooks to help people process their emotions. And all those will be available through Instagram.
Right on. Sounds great.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Good chat.
Thanks once again to Ben Wasserman for being on the show. And that was a fun talk. And I hope to see you next week. That's all I got. Follow me at Radical Pearson on Instagram and Twitter. I guess on Twitter and Blue Sky Threads, whatever you want. I don't care. Nothing matters anymore. I'm so just like, with internet clout, what with all of that stuff, follower counts and shit, I can't be bothered. But please do follow me. I wouldn't hate it. It's not like I don't want followers, it's just that I'm like, hey, sure, if you want, go ahead. If you're cool, maybe I'll follow you back, and that'd be fun. We'll have a little friendship. Rate and review the podcast on iTunes and Spotify. Tell a friend about the show. Tell him, hey, I listened to something kind of cool this week. And this is Guy. And he seemed kind of lackadaisical in the intro-outro, but the conversation that he got into with his guest was really cool. Guest seemed cool. And Brad mostly kept his mouth shut and let his guests talk. And that was fun. Anyway, that's all I got for you. Remember, go look at some foxes. Also, turn your phone off. It'll be a challenge. I think you can do it. You're going to figure this out. And that's all. I'll see you next time. Unless we're all dead.